Welcome to Fact Check Radio, a weekly wrap-up of spin and deception in politics. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of factcheck.org.
And I'm Vivica Novak, Fact Check's deputy director. This week, we'll tell you about a whopper from outgoing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Plus, we found several false and misleading statements on the Sunday talk shows.
But first, let's take a look at President Barack Obama's hour-long interview on CBS's 60 Minutes.
Obama overstated his case on spending for veterans. Here's the president.
Another example, we've probably done more than any administration over the last 20, 30 years when it comes to increasing veteran spending, because we've got over a million folks who've served.
The Obama administration did spend more than other administrations last year, but only in terms of raw dollars. There were larger percentage increases during President George W. Bush's term.
Total spending on veterans benefits and services was $108 billion in fiscal year 2010. That's an increase of $13 billion from 2009, and that's the largest one-year increase on record.
But in percentage terms, the increase was 13.6%. And spending on veterans went up more than that under President Bush. There was a 17.4% increase in 2005 and a 16.3% hike in 2008. All told, over the 8 years during which Bush approved the spending bills, veteran spending went up 112%.
Obama also gave a glowing view of the United States market share for electric car batteries.
In advanced batteries that go into electric cars, we used to have 2% of the market. We're now on pace, because of the investments that we made, to see us have as much as 40% of the market by 2015. So in 5 years, we went from 2% of the world market potentially to 40% of the world market.
Obama attempts to cover himself by using the word potentially. Really, his claim is extremely optimistic. The truth is that the U.S. is on pace to have the capacity to produce 40% of the world market of electric car batteries by 2015. But will we actually do that? Probably not.
The federal government has pushed for electric battery manufacturing plants with stimulus money and a tax credit program. But a lot stands in the way before the U.S. can live up to this potential production capacity.
Namely, the high cost of these batteries and the demand for electric cars. It's unclear how many Americans will actually buy these cars in the future. One industry expert told news organizations that the U.S. market share of batteries would be closer to 10%, not 40%, by 2015.
Here's one more from Obama, a statement about the bank bailout that we thought sounded fishy, but it turns out to be correct.
The bank interventions, TARP, that we inherited from the previous administration. Again, even though the banks, we're going to make sure that they pay that money back, and it won't have cost taxpayers as much as, say, the savings and loans crisis back in the 80s, it's still big. So
it's true. The final cost of the Troubled Asset Relief Program will turn out to be about $50 billion, according to the Treasury Department.
But the savings and loan debacle of the 1980s and early 1990s cost taxpayers $124 billion. That's more than double the projected cost of TARP, and that's not even accounting for inflation.
Moving on, remember supply-side economics? The theory that cutting tax rates actually produces more revenue for the government because people will invest the money they save and the economy will expand?
Yeah, and conversely, raising tax rates brings the government less revenue. That theory was very popular during the Reagan administration, right?
Yes, and it still is with some Republicans, like House member Mike Pence of Indiana. Here he is on ABC's This Week on November 7th. He's arguing about the effect of tax rates with David Stockman, who used to be Reagan's budget director and was a big supply-side proponent back then.
And I frankly have for about 30 years. David believes that every tax increase equals a revenue increase, but that's not true. Anybody who is familiar with the historical data from the IRS knows that raising income tax rates will likely actually reduce federal revenue.
So if we raise taxes,
they're out of this.
What are the top
I just have to respectfully disagree. You
but it's just common sense fact that when you raise the rates, you get more revenue. Normally, it's a bad thing to do, but we are in such...
So who's right on this one?
Stockman is. Look at what happened to revenues after Bill Clinton's 1993 tax increase, which fell almost entirely on the top 1 to 2% of earners. Tax revenues went from about $1.1 trillion in 93 to more than $2 trillion in 2000. They started to go down again after George W. Bush's 2001 tax cuts.
On another Sunday show, CBS's Face the Nation, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said a couple of misleading things about the new health care law. First, he said this.
Tuesday. A vast majority of Americans feel very, very uncomfortable with this new bill. People who supported us. Political independence.
But that's actually not true. According to pollster.com, which calculates a weighted average of the major polls, 49.4% of those surveyed oppose the law and 42.1% favor it. Another average, calculated by Real Clear Politics, found 51.3% oppose it. It's fair to say that Americans are very divided on the law, but neither 49.4% nor 51.3% makes a vast majority, as McConnell claimed.
McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, also made a claim that we heard a lot during the campaign, that the new law is a government takeover.
If that fails, then we're willing to look at all of the various pieces of this as they become effective and how we might impact trying to carry out our commitment to the American people to keep this awful 2,700-page monstrosity that took over one-sixth of our economy from going into effect.
Well, you know as well as I do, it'll be...
As we've said again and again, the new law doesn't create a government-run system. It will create even more business for the private insurers and private physicians that are at the heart of our current system. And it does this by requiring that people have coverage. The government will provide subsidies to help those in need to make sure it happens.
Finally, this week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wrote an opinion piece for USA Today, touting Democratic accomplishments since the party assumed control of both the House and Senate in January 2007.
She said the Dems increased spending to spark job growth, upped student aid, and gave tax credits to small businesses. That's all well and good.
But then she said this. We did all of this while restoring fiscal discipline to the Congress by making the pay-as-you-go rules the law of the land.
Fiscal discipline? Really? The deficit was $1.4 trillion at the end of 2009, and it decreased only slightly to $1.3 trillion at the end of fiscal year 2010. Over the last 2 years, the deficit has been at its highest and second highest percentage of gross domestic product since 1945.
Pelosi is correct in saying Congress restored the pay-as-you-go rule, which requires that new spending in some cases be offset by revenue increases or spending reductions, but that PAYGO law also raised the debt limit by $1.9 trillion.
And PAYGO was waived less than 2 weeks after President Obama signed it into law so that the Senate could pass a job creation bill. So much for restoring fiscal discipline.
You can read more about these claims and others at factcheck.org. FactCheck is a project of the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center. And that's it for this edition of FactCheck Radio. I'm Vivica Novak.
And I'm Lori Robertson. Thanks for joining us.